Support for Newsworthy comes from Enlivion, providing affordable housing and supportive services to help build strong foundations for a better future for hardworking families, seniors, and the disabled in Charlotte. More information available at Enlivion.com. And from Thrivent, a financial services company working with individuals and families to develop strategies for managing their money and planning for the future. More information at mark.hargrove@thrivent.com.
From 90.7 WFAE, this is Newsworthy for Wednesday, May 7th, 2025. I'm Eric Thiel. North Carolina Democrats are celebrating after a federal judge on Monday ordered the Elections Board to certify State Supreme Court Justice Allison Riggs as the winner in the November election. The ruling could mark the end of a six-month fight by Republican Jefferson Griffin to overturn his apparent loss in the race. Two recounts showed him losing by more than 700 votes, but Griffin sought to throw out more than 65,000 ballots from Democratic-leaning counties, which he said were missing voter registration information. He also said some overseas voters didn't show photo ID. In this week's ruling, District Court Judge Richard Myers dismissed Griffin's efforts, writing, quote, "You establish rules before the game. You don't change them after the game is done." Speaking on MSNBC Tuesday, Riggs said that post-election challenges are particularly insidious.
It's very pernicious, this idea that search for a friendly court and try and get people you think didn't vote for you removed from the voter rolls, cancel their votes. That cannot exist in a space where a democracy rules the day.
Riggs said she hopes this week's ruling will be the end of the saga, but Griffin can still appeal. The new North Carolina Board of Elections, which now has a Republican majority, will hold its first meeting today. The board is expected to remove Karen Brinson Bell as executive director. Steve Harrison has this report.
Republican lawmakers late last year shifted the power to appoint election board members from the governor, who is a Democrat, to the auditor, who's a Republican. After the State Court of Appeals allowed the law to stand last week, the GOP took over and now has a 3-2 majority. On the agenda for its first meeting, the appointment of a new executive director. The move would not be unprecedented. The party in power likes to pick the top elections official. Brinson Bell has held the job since 2019 and was appointed by a Democratic board. She replaced Kim Strack, who had been appointed by a Republican board of elections. Steve Harrison, WFAE News.
A U.S. Senate subcommittee met Tuesday to consider the nomination of former North Carolina Transportation Secretary Tony Tata to serve in a top role at the Pentagon. Tata, a retired general who also served as an acting undersecretary at the Pentagon during President Trump's first term, saw his previous nomination to a similar role derailed in 2020 after his past controversial comments resurfaced. Those comments came up again Tuesday. Here's Democratic Senator Jack Reed questioning Tata.
Prior to your last nomination, you publicly called President Obama, the commander-in-chief, quote, a terrorist leader, and said that then CIA Director John Brennan deserved to be executed. More recently, you claimed that there are, quote, mutinous discussions within military ranks to sabotage President Trump.
Tata said if confirmed to be Undersecretary for Personnel and Readiness, he would follow the Constitution. He said comments about mutinous discussions were about officers scheming to resist lawful orders from Donald Trump. The deadline for Real ID has arrived, and domestic air passengers are expected to have their identification cards ready today. Kenneth Lee has more.
It's been 20 years since Congress passed the Real ID Act to strengthen security standards for identification, such as driver's licenses. Starting Wednesday, the federal government will begin enforcing this law. A Real ID, marked with a star, is not required to drive. However, travelers will need it to board domestic flights or to enter military bases and federal facilities, such as courthouses. TSA spokesperson Dan Velez says a U.S. passport is also acceptable for air travel.
That is your Real ID. You can use it to get on a domestic flight. If you have a passport card, you can use that. If you're a DOD member, and you have a DOD ID card, or dependents with their ID cards can also travel by using those cards. If you're a DHS trusted security traveler, you can use that as well.
If you don't have a real ID, you can visit TSA.gov to see a list of acceptable forms of identification for air travel. Kenneth Lee, WFAE News.
The University of South Carolina Public Health School claims the Silfab solar facility in Fort Mill puts more than 53,000 people in a major chemical risk zone. WJZY reports the study looks at a worst-case scenario. In it, the four hazardous materials used at the facility, hydrochloric acid, anhydrous ammonia, hydrofluoric acid, and silane, could reach neighborhoods up to nearly 3.5 miles away from the facility. Silfab calls the report grossly inaccurate, saying it doesn't account for buildings, hills, and trees around the plant site, which could limit the spread of contamination. The company says Silfab's existing containment measures are not accounted for in the report. Two companies are partnering to acquire Charlotte-based Avid Exchange. The accounts payable automation company was formed in 2000 in a Charlotte coffee shop. At the end of last year, it had over 1,600 employees. TPG, based in Texas, and Atlanta-based Corpay will pay $10 a share for Active Exchange in a deal worth over $2 billion. It's expected to close in the fourth quarter of this year. A man has been arrested after allegedly slashing the tires of at least 40 cars in Ballantyne over the weekend. The tires were slashed in a Publix parking lot Saturday evening. Charlotte-Mecklenburg police arrested a 30-year-old man, Darren Ransom, in the parking lot and said he was armed with two kitchen knives. The National Endowment for the Arts has terminated a $20,000 grant meant to help a Charlotte theater stage three immigrant-centered productions. Senior staff at Three Bone Theater learned of the decision on Friday. Artistic director Robin Tynes Miller says the money was meant to help the small community theater stage a trilogy of plays by Chicano playwright Luis Alfaro that retells classic Greek myths with immigrant characters.
So we are appealing the decision in hopes that it may be reconsidered, but their priorities as an agency now, you know, we've been told that that production does not align with those priorities anymore.
The theater already staged the first production, titled Mojada, in August of last year. Tynes Miller says the theater will move forward with the next two works with or without NEA funding. One of the largest sushi distributors, Hiso Sushi, said it will relocate its headquarters and distribution operations to York County. The $5 million investment will bring 146 jobs to Rock Hill. The South Carolina Coordinating Council for Economic Development will award the county a $150,000 grant to assist with the costs of road improvements. Operations are expected to begin in August. The Charlotte City Council Monday night agreed in closed session to head off a potential lawsuit by reaching a six-figure financial settlement with Police Chief Johnny Jennings. Jennings was upset about a series of threatening text messages he received last year from former city council member Tariq Bakari, who had written to the chief that he would get him fired and cripple his legacy. For more on the story, which has lots of twists and turns, Steve Harrison spoke with our Nick Della Canal.
This started as a spat over whether officers should be allowed to wear outer carrier vests, and then we ended up here. What happened?
When he was on council, Bakari saw himself as a champion for rank-and-file police officers, and he thought they should be allowed to wear the outer carrier vests, which can provide extra protection from gunfire. Jennings resisted that, questioning whether the vests really provided additional protection, and he was concerned about them giving officers a military combat look. And then last spring, eight law enforcement officers were shot trying to serve a warrant in East Charlotte. Four were killed. It was the deadliest day in the city's law enforcement history. After that, Bakari ramped up his pressure campaign. He built a website dedicated to raising awareness about the vests.
Yeah, and then came the infamous text messages.
That's right. The two men had a long text chain from the late spring and early summer that turned increasingly hostile. Bakari said he would put maximum pressure on the city manager to fire Jennings. And then he wrote, "I will not stop, and it will cripple your legacy you've worked so hard for. Just a final bit of food for thought. You have 36 hours to call it all off by compromising in some small way. Otherwise, it's in God's hands." Bakari then wrote later that he has a special set of skills that I can promise you will be a very uncomfortable experience.
Yeah, cripple your legacy is particularly harsh. What happened after that?
As I understand it, Jennings was outraged. Corrine Mack of the local NAACP filed a public records request for the messages, and WSOC-TV reported that police officials that summer coached her on writing an ethics complaint against Bakari. And in November, WFAE wrote a story detailing all of those text messages.
Yeah, explosive stuff. Then what?
Well, it was a little strange, Nick. Nothing really happened. No other media outlets picked up on the story. Mayor Vilyles never publicly addressed it. Council could have held a vote to censure Bakari, which is a formal public rebuke. That never happened. And you had a city council member shredding the chief of police, and no one in the city stepped up to publicly defend him. And speaking of going away, Mac filed her ethics complaint in January, and the new city attorney dismissed it.
Okay, so, you know, the city pushed it aside, but apparently Chief Jennings was still seething. Is that right?
I think that's correct. He floated the idea of filing a lawsuit against the city, arguing that the controversy damaged his future earnings once he left CMPD. And the two sides have been negotiating for several weeks.
But the chief never filed a lawsuit.
That's right.
And the city agreed to preemptively settle? On what grounds?
I think that's a really interesting question, and it's hard to say, really, because no one in the city is talking. I'm not a lawyer, but it's not immediately clear to me what the legal grounds for a lawsuit or a settlement would be. Bakari's texts were certainly harsh, but arguably not libelous. And being the chief of police of one of the nation's largest cities will obviously come with a lot of criticism, some warranted, some not. So you have a situation where the city attorney's office dismissed the ethics complaint, the mayor publicly never addressed the threatening texts, and now a majority of city council has agreed to pay Jennings, who's still police chief, what we understand is more than $100,000. And for context, Jennings' salary is $280,000.
Bakari left the city last month and is now a high-ranking transit official in the Trump administration. I understand city council members are not speaking about this because it's a personnel issue. What about police officers?
The Fraternal Order of Police said Charlotte taxpayers should be outraged over the settlement. Jennings hasn't commented on the case, but he's been with CMPD for 33 years, and it's possible this entire settlement or extra compensation is a prelude to him retiring.
That is WFAE's Steve Harrison. Steve, thanks for your reporting.
Thanks, Nick.
And for Wednesday, May 7th, that's Newsworthy. I'm Eric Thiel.